Today's shir is Masechta Yevamos Daf Tezvav. We will begin on Daf Yudal Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. We've been learning about the machlokes that we have between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, particularly in Hilchos Yivam Mechalitza, but of course not limited to those situations. And the fundamental question that the Gemara has been focusing on is, we know, as the Gemara told us, that halacha follows the opinion of Beis Hillel. And there's two reasons for that. One is because Beis Hillel was the Roy, Beis Hillel represented the majority. And the other reason why the halacha follows the opinion of Beis Hillel is because there was a bas kol that came out from Shemayim that says that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And the Gemara has been focused on trying to understand, now that that's been established, that the halacha is Beis Hillel, like Beis Hillel, what was Beis Shammai's attitude? Was Beis Shammai's attitude that they still followed their own opinion? Or was the opinion of Beis Hillel accepted even by the Beis Shammai? Says the Gemara, Toshma, Doma Rabbi Yochim Manuri. Rabbi Yochim Manuri commented, Heich halacha zu revechs b'Yisrael. How do we approach the situation of a tzaras erva? Nase kedivri Beis Shammai, if we follow the opinion of Beis Shammai, that says that a tzaras erva is a candidate for yibum. So if somebody is going to make yibum on a tzaras erva, then according to the Beis Hillel, where there is no mitzvah of yibum, as we've often said, when there is no mitzvah of yibum, then the woman who has yibum is considered a eshesach, a very serious erva. Not only is she considered a serious erva, but it will be that the child is a mamzer, because we know that if a child born from such a marriage, the child born from such a union is a mamzer, if it's because she's a chayiv karis. On the other hand, nasik divrei Beis Hillel, if we're going to follow the opinion of Beis Hillel and not do any yibum or chalitza in such a child, then the child is a pogum, because yibum of chalitza should have been done. And when this woman married without having Yibam Chalitza first, the child is a pogim of Divrei Beis Shammai. So according to Rashi, that if the Shmeres Yavam will now marry a Kohen without having Yibam Chalitza, that if she'll have a boy, that boy will be considered a Cholol. The Tosfos disagrees and says that the son would not necessarily be a Cholol, but a daughter born from that marriage would be also to marry a Kohen. The Ramban and other Rishonim say that everybody would agree that not necessarily would it affect that the child, boy or girl, should be also to marry a Kohen. However, the Ramban says that the definition of a pogum in the context of this Gemara is that the child would be an individual who's not of the highest level of yichus. And we certainly don't want to bring those type of children to the world. So therefore, Rabbi Yochim Manuri came up with a solution. He said, "Boyev in the sakalam of tzaris, let's make a rule for all tzaris, sheichaltzus v'loy yivsiabmais, that they all should have chalitza." So according to Beis Shammai, that would be great, because they are obligated in either having chalitza or yibam. So chalitza works. According to Beis Hillel, they're not obligated, but it doesn't really affect anything, so let's let them have chalitza. But says the Gemara, they speak of lignas adover, they couldn't carry out this eitza achinit for ashar until it was too late, until they didn't make this and put into place. Says the Gemara, Amlam of Shimon Gamliel. So Shimon Gamliel said to Rabbi Yochim Manuri, man nas lahem bnei tzaras rishonis mata. He said, if we're going to institute your suggestion, what we're going to do is saying that all the people who didn't have chalitza will be considered perhaps mamzerim. We will make them into mamzerim. Says the one, if we're going to say that Beis Shammai followed their opinion, Hanan the Kamri, we could understand from Shimon Gamliel's comment, ma nasa, what should we do? Because according to Beis Shammai, something should have been done, and nothing was done, and has serious ramification. Eli Amrit, if we're going to say that even when there's machloikus b'sham b'shilul, b'shamai didn't follow their own opinion, they recognized that the halacha is like b'shilul, my nasa, why, what is the big deal? That if a woman had yibum, the child, according to b'shilul, will be a mamzer. B'shamai didn't follow their opinion anyway. Says the Gemara, Amar of Nachman Yitzchak, the issue here wasn't about the children who had, of those who had yibum. That isn't the question. What Rabbi Yochanan Nuri wanted to accomplish was that he wanted to do something that would satisfy the Tzara's obligation. Oman Nasa, and what was Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel's comment? Hanach Tzara's, the Beis Hillel, those Tzara's that followed the opinion of Beis Hillel and did not have Yibum for sure not, but not even have Chalitza, what would we, according to Beis Shammai, Hechet Nevelu, what will we do? Tell them, Lichlitzu, to tell them now, after they're already married to other men, that they should have Chalitza, that would cause Mimasa Agavrayu, that the men that they married and lived, and those men lived with them until now, will start thinking there was something wrong with our marriage, because here our wives are already married to us, and now we're doing Chalitza. And if we'll say Lemasin, that doesn't bother us, says the Gemara, of course it bothers us, because we know the Torah says, the Torah is given in a way that shouldn't cause that type of relation, feeling between a husband and a wife. And because of that, Rav Shimon said, it's great that we never had to institute Rav Yochanan Nuri's rule. The halacha is that we follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, and therefore we don't want to have to come up following the opinion of Beis Hillel Shammai, which will cause discomfort between husbands and wives. So from here we see that the halacha is that the Mefarshim explain that Atman is for a shah. The Chazdi Tovar explains that this was Meshamayim. When the Shemayim, it came out that they did not make this rule. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want this to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that there should be, the halacha should be, that no chalitza is required. We followed the opinion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we followed the opinion of Beis Hillel, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that that's what we should do, and there should be no other considerations. Particularly, I saw that the Mefarshim say, because if they would have instituted that chalitza is required, at times, not always is chalitza going to be done. There's going to be situations where the yavam, the brother, is not here, and he won't be able to do chalitza, and this woman will remain in aguna. And she's remaining in aguna, even though sometimes it is what happens, that a woman who's waiting for chalitza remains in aguna. But I saw that the Paiskim explain, if the halacha turns the woman into an aguna, that's what the halacha does. We can't manipulate the halacha. But here, it's only being done because of a chumrah. And since it's only being done because of a chumrah, then the halacha is, we should not create a situation that because of that chumrah, women may end up being agunas. So again, the Gemara attempts to discuss this question. Did Beis Shammai follow their opinion or not? Toshma, Damar of Tavni, Ta'avni, I wish Masa Tavis Hatzaras Abbas, Yodei Vasa'ena. They'll marry Hatzaras Abbas. So we see that Rav Tarfon, who was the Talmud of Beis Shammai, not only did he agree with Beis Shammai, but he actually wanted to show that he's going to do like Beis Shammai held. So it's clearly indication that Beis Shammai did continue doing what he held. It wasn't just something that they spoke about. Says the Gemara, Ema, the right way to say it is Vasiena, that it actually meant to say that he'll marry her off without giving Chalitza to show that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. But ask the Gemara, how can we say that that's what Rav Tarfon said? For Ta'avni Kama, Ta'avni means that I want to do so. But if he's paskening like Beis Hillel, what's the chiddush? In other words, if Rav Tarfon was passing like Rabbi Shammai, where, of course, normally we don't pass like Beis Shammai. And Rabbi Tarfon was announcing, I want to do like Beis Shammai said we should do, so we could understand what was unique in this statement. But if what he meant to say was that I'm going to do like Beis Hillel says to do, there's nothing unique. What's special about his statement? Says the Gemara, what was special about his statement was Lafukim with Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, where Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri just taught us that we should perhaps require chalitza for everybody. What he meant to say was that I'm not going to follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's opinion that chalitza should be done by Tzaras Erva to satisfy all opinions. Rather, I'm going to show everybody that we follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, and Beis Shammai's opinion is not considered at all. So Gemara brings another story to try to attempt to see, did Beis Shammai follow their opinions? Tashma, Ma'aseh Bebita Shel Gamliel. There was an episode with the daughter of Gamliel, Shenesua Laba Achiv. Gamliel's brother, Abba, married Gamliel's daughter, or Meis Blei Banim, and he died without children. For Reba and Rabbi Gamliel, Tzarasa. So we see that Gamliel followed the opinion of Beis Shammai regarding Tzaras Erva. And not only did he follow the opinion of Beis Shammai regarding Tzaras Erva, but he actually did it to show that that's the halacha. Says the Gemara, how could we say that? But Tisbara, Rabbi Gamliel Matamai de Beis Shammai, could we suggest that Gamliel followed the opinion of Beis Shammai, that he considers a Matal Beis Shammai? Wasn't Rabbi Gamliel a descendant of Beis Hillel? Elishani Bitasher Gamliel, the story of the daughter of Gamliel is a totally different situation. She was an islandess. Ask the Gemara, how can we say that that's pshat in the Braisa? For Amidik Tani Seif, as we continue learning the Braisa says, the Chayim says that was the situation. Mechlal, clearly, the Tanakhama suffer that had nothing to do with idleness. Rather, it had to do with lav idleness. So it was the question that we've been discussing of Tzaras Erva. Says the Gemara, no. It was completely a situation of Tzaras idleness. What is the difference between, what is the machloikah between the Rish and the Sefer? Hikav alai hikavai ikavinayu. According to the Tanakhama, when is the halacha that there is no, that the Tzaras idleness has to have Yibam or Chalitza, is if the husband never knew that she was an idleness. So since the husband never knew that the wife was an idleness, so therefore the halacha is that the Kiddushin are considered a Mekach Tos with idleness, because had he known, he would never have remained with her. And that's where the halacha is that we have the Yibam. The Sefer, however, was a situation where he was not aware, that he was aware she was an idleness. So if he was aware that she was an idleness, it cannot be considered a situation of Tzaras idleness. And that's why the Tanakhama will say she's exempt from Yibam. She's not considered a Tzaras idleness because the husband was aware of that marriage, and therefore the marriage is a marriage. And that's the difference. But it has nothing to do with Tzaras Erva. That's one way of explaining. As we discussed when we learned Daf Yud Gimel, we know, the Gemishnah already taught us, that if the husband divorces the wife who's related to his brother, then the tzara is obligated in Yibam. But we had a discussion on Daf Yud Gimel, at what point did that divorce take place? Did the divorce take place before he died? And as long as they were divorced, as long as the erva was not married to the deceased brother when he died, then the tzara is a candidate for Yibam. Because according to that explanation, the defining moment for Yibam is the moment of death. And since at the moment of death, she wasn't a tzara's erva, that's all that we need to take into consideration. That's what the Tanakhama discusses. Then we learned that no, that as long as they were tzaras at any point, even if at the moment of death they were not tzaras, the halacha is that nesu'un mapilim, and that woman would be a tzaras erva. And that's the discussion in the Braisa. What is the defining moment regarding Hilchas Yibam? Is it the moment of death? And therefore, even if they were tzaras at one point, it's immaterial? Or is the defining moment that... Or is the defining moment that we look at they were never allowed to be tzaris to each other. If they were ever tzaris to each other, then the halacha would be, then this woman is not a candidate for Yibam. V'ibay Seima, another way of explaining this is Tanai B'bi Ikabinayu, where Abba married Rav Gamliel's daughter, but he made a condition that if you are a balas mum, and certainly a woman who's unable to have children is a balas mum, then our marriage should not be a valid marriage. And then they continued living together. The Tanna Kamma holds that if that Tanai was made, that condition was made in the marriage, even though he knew that she had this problem, the Kedushin wasn't a Kedushin. The other Tanna is of the opinion because the question is, if he had relations with her after making the Tanai, do we say that having those relations show that he doesn't care about the Tanai? According to the Man Domin, it says that having relations doesn't make that he doesn't care about the Tanai. That's why Rav Gamliel would say that this wife is not considered a Tzaras Erva, because the marriage wasn't considered a valid marriage. The Achayim of the opinion that even though he made the Tanai, and of course, as we've learned, and we'll learn in Masechet Kedushin, a Tanai can be made in a marriage, but here there's an indication that he forfeited that Tanai. The fact that he had relations with her afterwards is clearly an indication that he doesn't care about it. And therefore, since it's an indication that he doesn't care about the Tanai anymore, she's considered a full-fledged wife. And since she's considered a full-fledged wife, that's why she's not considered Tzaras Erva. So again, this has no bearing, this entire story has no bearing on our question, did they follow the opinion of Beisham? Did Beisham follow his opinion or not? Says the Gemara, Masr Misharsha. We know that in the cycle of Maisris, the halach is every year Maisrishin is taken off and given to the Levi. In the first and the second and the fourth and the fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, we take Maisa Sheni. In the third and the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, we take Maisa Ani. The Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah quotes a machloikis of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. When is the Rosh Hashanah Lilonis? Is it on Rosh Chodesh Shvat or is it on Chamish Asar B'Shvat, on Tu B'Shvat? And it would be very relevant for a fruit that what year is that fruit considered the fruit? Is it a second year fruit or a third year fruit? Is it a fifth year fruit or a sixth year fruit? Now, the halacha by Esroigim is a very interesting halacha, as the Gemara over there in Masechet Rosh Hashanah taught us. Esrig normally follows the time of Lakita, when it's collected like vegetables. However, when trees, fruit, we follow the Chanota. And even though Esrog has in many ways the halacha of a vegetable, in this halacha we treat it like a tree. And it says the Gemara, the Brisa says, Maisa, in there, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yudal Rama Beis, Maisa Rav Kiva Shalikat Esrog Be'echa B'Shvat, he collected a tree, Esrog on Echa B'Shvat, for Nogba Shnei Yisurim. That means it was, he collected an Esrog B'Shvat, but we look at the Chanota as well. And he was Machmer, one like Beis Shammai, that's considered already a third year fruit. Vechke Beis Hillel, that's considered Beis Hillel, it's a second year fruit. So we see that Beis Shammai clearly followed their opinion. Because if Beis Shammai didn't follow their opinion, why is the Rebbe Akiva concerned to do what Beis Shammai want them to do? Says the Gemara, of course not. What Rebbe Akiva only followed the opinion of Beis Hillel. But Rav Kiva says the Gemara is stuck b'klei. He wasn't quite certain who held what. V'lo yada, I Beis Hillel b'echa b'shvat amar. Did Beis Hillel hold that Rosh Chodesh Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah? I b'chamish b'asu amar. Or did he hold that the 15th day of Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah? So he was only interested to follow the opinion of Beis Hillel, but he wasn't quite certain what did Beis Hillel hold. So as the Rishonim point out, you can't take Maisa twice If you only if there's only one chiyuv meiser, if you take meiser twice, you're going to end up with new questions. So what he did was he took meiser sheni from these esroigim, and he took that meiser sheni and redeemed it on money. And that money, which we know that halacha is the meiser sheni can be redeemed on money, and then you have to take that money up to Yerushalayim and use that money to buy food in Yerushalayim. And he treated the money that way. Now, the fruit that he had started with, he didn't treat it as meiser sheni fruit that was redeemed. That the halacha is that after the meiser sheni fruit is redeemed, anyone can eat it. But rather, what he did with this, he gave it to the aniyim, he gave it to poor people. That's the way he was able to do both without any halachic concerns. So again, Moser Mazutra. The Gemara Masechta Sukkah, Daf Chav Ches, has a discussion at what age is a cotton mechuyev in the mitzvah sukkah. According to Beis Hillel, it depends, tzorach li'imoy or ain't tzorach li'imoy, if he still needs his mother or not. According to Beis Shammai, it's a much younger age. Even a cotton, hatzorach li'imoy, cotton that still relies on its mother, has to sit in the sukkah. It says the Gemara Masav Yolda Kalosa Shama Azakim. There was an episode where Shama Azakim's daughter-in-law had a baby, and she obviously could not go out to the sukkah. Or Piches as a maziva, he opened up the ceiling, the silik agaba mita, and he put tzchach on top of the bed, b'shvil hakotten, that the young child should be able to sit in the sukkah. So we see Shmamino, isn't this clearly a raya that Beis Shammai were machmer? So the Rishonim point out, even Beis Shammai, who has a younger age, when we speak about Hilchos Sukkah, does not hold that a baby that was just born has to sit in the sukkah. Nobody's going to take that approach. So Rishonim say that wasn't the child that they were concerned about sukkah for. This woman, his daughter-in-law, Shammai's daughter-in-law, had another baby child, another son who was older. But it was still tzorach lima. It was attached to its mother. But according to the Shammai, that child has to sit in the sukkah. But his mother can't take him to the sukkah. She just had a baby. So that's why they did this. But clearly we see from here that Shammai followed his opinion. Answers the Gemara, Hasam haroi oimelech fushi avikovid. If somebody sees that the ceiling is open, they're not going to automatically assume that he's doing it because that's what he considers is what the halacha requires. They're going to say he did it because they wanted some air in the room. So as the Ritva explains this Gemara, Ritva says the concern in our sugya is always a concern of leisasa agudas agudas. If Beis Shammai is going to follow his opinion and Beis Hillel is going to follow their opinion, it looks like they're two tyrants, as we discussed in the previous shurim. It looks like this, it could create machloikis. But if it could be done in a way that will not in any way indicate that there's a machloikis here, then there's no reason to do it. And that's what happened over here. And in fact, I saw there's a very serious shaila amongst the Paiskim regarding tefillin on Chol HaMoed. And there are different menhagim, different communities, some wear tefillin, some don't wear tefillin. And the question that comes up often is wearing tefillin in a shul where most people don't wear tefillin, or not wearing tefillin in a shul where most people wear tefillin. And the Paiskim suggest that the Eish Lavrom says that the issue of not wearing tefillin in a shul where everybody or most people are wearing tefillin is much less of a concern. For, explains the Eish Lavrom, if everyone's wearing tefillin and you're not wearing tefillin, it's not necessarily a statement because I hold that you don't have to wear tefillin. It could well be that I hold you have to wear tefillin. Just for some reason I don't have tefillin, I'm suffering a stomach ailment. There are different reasons why a person would be able to say that he's not wearing tefillin, even though it has nothing to do with a real halachic issue that he's saying that I'm not allowed to wear tefillin. And therefore, the Eish Lavrom says, even though there may be a problem with somebody wearing tefillin where most people are not wearing tefillin, there is no problem, as the Gemara just said, with someone not wearing tefillin in a place where everybody is wearing tefillin. We discussed at the end of Masechta Chagiga, there was a discussion where you have a situation where you have a mikveh that is a kosher mikveh. As we often learn, the shear of a kosher mikveh is 40 saw, and there's a pool of water that doesn't have 40 saw next to it. How could we connect these two pools that if one immerses himself in the pool that doesn't have 40 saw, it's still considered as if he went to a kosher mikveh? And the Gemara, there's a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel's opinion is that as long as there's a hole, kisheferes hanoid, it's a hole large enough that one could put in two fingers and twirl them around in that hole, that's enough of a hole that would connect these two pools. Beis Shammai is much stricter. Beis Shammai says you have to have that most of the wall between those two pools has to be open. So ask the Gemara, the Mishnah, Masechta Mikvaos, Perek Dal Mishnah 8 teaches us, Masa B'Shekekas Yehu, there was a story in the Shekekas in the city of Yehu, Shoshu B'Shalayim, that was in Shalayim, and there was one pool that did not have 40 saw in it, V'Hoys in the Kuvah L'Mikvah, but it was open, it had a hole connecting it to a mikvah, the Kol Tahar Shoshu B'Shalayim Nasa Agaba, it was a mikvah that was used in Yerushalayim, v'sholcha Beis Shammai v'chivua. And Beis Shammai went and opened up the hole wider. So Beis Shammai Omrim, because as we just said, Beis Shammai's opinion is that the two mikvahs cannot be connected ach tifachas beruba, until it's mostly open, says the Gemara. But the Tanan, the Mishnah over there teaches us, Eirim mikvahs, how are two mikvahs connected? Shveres b'anoid b'avi b'chalel. If there's a hole the size of a Shveres Hanoid, which is Shtei Etzbos, the moon for two fingers, the Chayzus L'Mekoymam, that could be moved around. So we see from here that Beis Shammai did not rely on that. Isn't this clearly indication that Shmamina Osu, that Beis Shammai followed their own opinion? Says the Gemara Hossam, again, as we just said, the Ritva's explanation. The Ritva says that the only time Beis Shammai accepted what Beis Hillel said was in a situation where if they're not going to do it like Beis Hillel said, it's going to be clear and obvious that they don't agree with Beis Hillel. But if it's a situation where people will not necessarily explain it that way, they could do what they hold. And here too, says the Gemara, Haraya Oimer, Lefushimayim Hu Dekovet. What he did was only to, he said, I needed to have more water between these two pools. That's what people will assume, and they won't say he did it because he holds lahalacha that the small hole is inadequate. Tashma, Damar Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadik, Shayesi Olam Taira Etzer Rabbi Yochanan Achani. When I was learning Taira by Rabbi Yochanan Achani, Raisi Shayesi Pascha Reya Va B'Melach B'Shnei B'Tzayrus. He ate bread, dry bread with salt. Ba'va Dati as Abba, and I went and I notified my father, Amali. Bring some olives to him. He shouldn't just have to eat plain bread and salt. And he saw that these olives were moist. I don't eat from them. So the Breda Yoina says that what he was trying to fulfill is what it says in Pirkei Avos. It says in Pirkei Avos, Kachi Dakash al Taira, Paspa Melech Teichel, Maiba Musura Teshta, just eat plain bread and plain water. He should sleep on the floor. So Rabbi Elazar was teaching us that that's what he saw, the way Rabbi Yochanan ben Charni lived. Furthermore, the Miri points out, we're going to get into the Gemara, that why he wasn't ready to eat that food. But when somebody wants to be machmer, he says, and not eat something, it's not appropriate that he should make announcements, well, I'm a machmer, and since I'm a machmer, I'm not going to only eat the food, I don't agree with you. Let's look at the wording of the Gemara, he says. He says, the wording of the Gemara is, ain't any oichel zaysim, I'm not any eating. He didn't make any announcements that he was interested in not accepting his halacha, and his opinion. Says the Gemara, says of Aaron Cutler, we're going to see how machmer they were. They were machmer on one hand, as the Gemara is going to teach us. But even though they were very machmer, they never did it at the expense of someone else. They did it in a quiet, unassuming fashion, in a modest fashion, that it shouldn't be obvious that that's what they're doing. Now, what is this all about? We know, we've spoken many times, that food cannot be mekabel tumah unless it gets wet. And only 7 liquids can make a food wet. One of them is shemen, is oil. May peiros, fruit juices, are not a mashka that could make a food susceptible to tumah. There's machloikas b'sha'an b'sillel about the juice, the mohel, that comes out of olives before they're squeezed. Is that considered oil and therefore has the ability to makshe food to makabel tumah, or is it considered like fruit juice that is not makshe? Beishami's opinion is that it's not makshe. Beis Hillel's opinion is that it's makshe. What happened over here was that these olives were in an earthenware basket. And Rabbi Yochanan Achorni was concerned, says Rashi, that maybe an Amoritz touched the back of this basket, this earthenware basket, and made it tamei, and made the olives tamei, because they became tumah by the moil that came out. Of course, the Rishonim ask on Rashi that the halacha is that a kli cheres is only mekabel tumah mi'aviroi, from its interior, not from its exterior. So why does Rashi say that the Amoritz touched the exterior of the earthenware jar that would make everything inside tamei? So there are a number of answers. One answer is that indeed that's what Rashi means. It was the inside. Others say that we often find throughout Shas that tumas mashkin, that liquids are extremely susceptible to tumah. And therefore, even though normally kli cheres is only metama ma'aviroi from its interior, when we're speaking about mashkin, which we're speaking about here, they're metama even migaboy from their exterior. And a third pshat is that here we're speaking about tumas amoritz. And included in the chumrah of tumas amoritz is not only that we're concerned that anything amoritz comes in contact with, as we discussed at the end of Masech, the Chagiga extensively becomes tamei, but even the exterior of a kli cheres becomes tamei, because that's the tumas amoritz. Says the Gemara, Bas v'adati is Abba. So I notified, says Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, my father, that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't want to eat these olives. Amalei leich ve'amalei, go notify him, chavis nekuvas haisa. It was a barrel that was perforated on the bottom. And the reason the olives got wet, sheshesmus shmarim, there was sediment that accumulated on the bottom of the barrel, and that's why the juice that came out was touched the olives. In other words, what he meant to say to Rabbi Yochanan, even if you're going to be machmer, that the moil is able to make the olives be mekabel tumah, the fact that he perforated the basket, he shows that he's not interested in that moil. And the halacha is, as we also discussed, that if a food becomes wet, it only becomes mukshel kabel tumah as if the owner wanted it to become wet. Here, he clearly didn't want the olives to get wet. That's why he perforated the basket of this basket to make that the moil should run out. Because, and therefore, you have no concern he was sending a message to Rabbi Yochanan that these olives became mukshel kabel tumah. Tanan, chavish al zeis megugolim, if we have a basket of olives, b'shamar ein tzirich lenakev, there is no reason to perforate it, because we, according to Beshamai, the moil does not have the ability to be machshir the food, the olives to be machshir the kabel tumah. We do have to make that hole, because if the moil comes in contact with the olives, and I know they're going to come into contact, and I'm satisfied they're going to come into contact, then it becomes machshir the kabel tumah. Umaydim, but it says the Mishnah in Masech Idyos, that even though Beis Hillel is machmer that the moil can be machshir the olives lekabel tumah, Reis Hillel agrees, Shem Nikva, if you perforate the basket, and then Sesmu Shmarm, and then it gets closed up because of the sediment, Shitar did not Mekabel Toma. Vavpi She Talmud Shammai Haya, even says the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar Tzadik comments that even though Beshamai, even Rabbi Yochanan was a Talmud of Shammai, still, so according to Shammai, there is no concern. Still, we see Kamas of Le'asa Elikadir Beis Hillel. He followed the opinion of Beis Hillel. Says the Gemara, Yeah, Bishlama Asu, that he always follows, the Beis Shammai always follow their own opinion. Hein Rav Asai, that's what we can understand, that he went L'chumra, and he followed the opinion of Beis, followed here the opinion of Beis Hillel. Eliamrit Loy Asu, that even Beis Shammai didn't follow their own opinion. My Rav Usai. So from here we see that normally Beis Shammai do follow their own opinion. Of course, the Rishonim asked the question. The halach is that somebody who does the chumris Beis Shammai and chumri Beis Hillel is considered a ksil. So how come Rabbi Yochanan followed everybody's chumris? So the Rishonim respond. If the halach, as we keep on repeating, is like Beis Hillel, so when somebody's following the opinion of Beis Hillel, it doesn't represent that he's a machmer of Beis Hillel and machmer Beis Shammai. It's he's following what Chazal told us to follow the opinion of Beis Hillel. But here clearly we see that Beis Shammai continued to following their own opinion. Toshma, Sholos Abishua, Tzor Sabas Mahu. What is the status of a Tzor Sabas? Amalem, he said, Machlok Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. It's Machlok Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. Then he asked, Halacha Kedivrei Mi, whose halacha do we follow? Amalem, to which he said to them, "B'mnei matam machnisi rosh b'shnei harm gedolim." Why are you bringing me into this type of a question? Between two great individuals, b'shnei machlokes gedolos, b'im b'shamer b'shilo. You want me to decide in such a situation? Mesyareni, I'm concerned to get involved. Shemi rutsa gegolti. The people of Beishamai's family, if I'm going to publicly decide like Beis Hillel, will come after me. What I can tell you is, there were two great families who lived in Yerushalayim, Mishpachas Beis Tzvua Ben Achmai, and Mishpachas Beis Kufay Ben Bekoshes, Shem Ben Tzoris, that they were descendants of Tzoris Erva, who got married without Chalitza or Yibam. And from these families emanated Kohanim Gedolim, that Shimshon Gabim Mizbeach. If we're going to say that Beis Shammai always continued following their opinion, Tanu the Kamer, we could understand Rabbi Yeshua's statement, Mishyareni, that he's going to say something contrary, that he's concerned to say contrary to Beis Shammai. But says the Gemara, Eli Amrit Lai, also, that even Beis Shammai didn't follow their own opinion, Amai Kamer Mishyareni. Why is he so scared? He's not doing anything different than Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai himself follows the opinion or follows the opinion of Beis Hillel. So why would he be scared to say that the halacha is like Beis Hillel? So I saw that the Ben Ishchai explains the Gemara, that here, the machlokes, as the Gemara is just about to explain, is a machlokes that affects the yichus of Klal Yisrael. It's a machlokes that affects is the child perhaps a mamzer or not. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua said, a combination of everything we've been learning. Beis Hillel are indeed the Roiv. Beis Hillel indeed have the Basco saying that we should follow the opinion of Beis Hillel. On the other hand, we have Beis Shammai, as the Gemara said in our previous year, Mechadadid Tvei, sharper. And also we have the consideration that as I just said, that this question that we're deciding here is a question regarding the yichus of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, when we combine all these considerations, Rabbi Yeshua made a statement, Mishyareni, I'm concerned what to do. But clearly, this is an indication that Beis Shammai continue following their opinion. V'nan nami d'asol, says the Gemara, even if we'll say, based on the statement of Rabbi Yeshua, that Beis Shammai followed their own opinion, Mishyareni, why would Rabbi Yeshua be concerned? V'am Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, is that a mamza ella mechayvi beis bezdin? In other words, if we're going to say that there is no chiv of yibam mechalitza, so if a yavam does have relations with his sister-in-law, then it would mean that he had relations with an Eishes Ach. An Eishes Ach is a Chiyuv Karis. So we have been saying that the opinion of the Chachamim is that a child that's born from such a relationship is a Mamzer. But Rabbi Yeshua's opinion is that he still wouldn't be a Mamzer. Because according to Rabbi Yeshua, a Mamzer is only somebody who's born from a relationship which carries with it the Mises Besdin Oynish. This is not that type of relationship. So why does the Gemara say, that Rabbi Yeshua says, Misyari ani, I'm concerned. Why is he concerned? There's nothing to be concerned about. The child won't be a Mamzer according to his opinion anyway. Says the Gemara, Nay nami the Mamzer lehavi. Yes, according to Yeshua, the child would not be a Mamzer. However, Pogam yehava. He'll certainly be considered a Pogam. They may not marry a Kohen. How will we know that? Mekav choyma mealmona. The aloch is a Kohen God may not marry an almona. And the aloch is that if a Kohen Gadol does marry an almona, the child is a cholol. Because as the Torah says, when a Kohen Gadol marries an almona, the Torah says, V'lo yechalel zara be'amav. So Rabbi Yeshua made the following kavachoyma. Ma almona, she'en asur noy b'kol. The isser of almona Kohen Gadol is a very unique isser. It's only between almona and Kohen Gadol. And yet the child that's born from such a union is pogam. Is surah, in these cases, Yivam L'Shuk, which applies to everyone, Eishes Ach, that applies to everyone, the child is certainly a pogam. And that's what Rabbi Yeshua was trying to say. I'm concerned to say something that will cause this type of a situation. So the question that I saw the Rishonim ask, if indeed the halacha is that the Bnei Tzoros, that if a Tzora got married without Yibum, is the child is a pogam, so how, according to Beis Shammai, did they appoint these individuals to be Kohanim? So the Pashut Pshat is that indeed Beis Shammai was dissatisfied, but we followed Beis Hillel, and the fact that Beis Shammai is dissatisfied is not a consideration according to the halacha. That's one pshat that I saw. Another pshat that I saw is that Beis Shammai actually said that the entire story never happened. And according to Beis Shammai, they never had a situation where such a woman, where such descendants of such a woman were Kohanim Gedolim. Ask the Gemara, Kabaymanei, we asked the question about the Tzoros. What's the halacha, the Tzoros erva require Yibum Chalitza? And his answering about Bnei Tzoros. That's not the question. Answers the Gemara, what happened was Tatka Baimanei. There were actually two questions were asked. One question was Tzoros Mai, that what is the status of the Tzoros? Do they have to have Yibum Chalitza or not? And the second question was Imtim Tzolayim Tzoros Kabeis Hillel, that we're going to follow the Saka Beis Hillel, that Tzoros Erva don't have to have Yibum or Chalitza. What will be the halacha? If we're going to Tzoros Beis Hillel, Bnei Tzoros the Beis Hillel, what will be their status according to Beis Shammai? Where will be the status of a Yevamah who got married without having Yibum or Chalitza first? Says the Marla Mai Nafkamina. Why do we have to know? This question, as we just explained, is only a question according to the opinion of Beis Shammai. But we don't paskin like Beis Shammai. So if a Tzoros Erva got married without Yibum or Chalitza, that's she did what she's supposed to do. So why is it important to us to know the status of her children? Says the Gemara, what we need to know for is for a different question. Everybody agrees that if somebody divorces his wife and she marries someone else, he may not remarry her. If somebody remarried her, the question, and Beis Hillel agrees that that is certainly usur. What will be the status if they have a child according to Beis Hillel? Mi kamrinan, do we say the kavachayim that we just learned from Amon el Kohen Gadol? And we'll say, ma Amon el Kohen Gadol shen esur shav b'kol, the child is pogam. Certainly, the machzik rishasoi, or Yevam l'shuk, that wasn't supposed to get married, that applies to everyone, shesur shav b'kol, and it didn't, she'd been a pogam. Oy dilma, the halacha is if Almana marries a Kohen Gadol, she becomes a chalola that may never marry a Kohen. But that halacha doesn't apply by Yevana Lashuk or by a Machzik Rishosoi, that they don't become disqualified for a Kayin just because they had a relationship they should not have had. Vamaloi. And for that, Rabbi Shur responded, Tzaris, when you ask me what is the status of Tzaris ever, Mishyarani, I'm concerned to answer. But Nei Tzaris, when you ask me what is going to be the status of the Tzaris ever children, that according to Beis Hillel, their mother got married without Chalitza, and he made Elchem, I could tell you definitively that such children were appointed to be Kohanim Gedolim. So here we see that sometimes Rabbonim, Yeshua took the approach, Mishyarani, I'm concerned what to say. So I saw an interesting shaila that the Cheshuki Chema discusses. He says there was once a shaila that came to a Rav about the halachic status of a individual. And after the Rav did the proper investigation, he determined that this child was a mamzer. But the family, he knew, would be very upset and would go after him. So he was scared to say anything. So what is the Rav supposed to do? Is he supposed to say, and whatever happens, happens? Or is he supposed to indeed be concerned and maybe not say anything? So the Torah says, Le'segurav ne'ish. And the Medrash says on it, Shem etam mishyar ani mipleni shem yaharagas si abini, who, that I'll get killed, or shem elekas kadeshi, or he will cause me financial damage. The halacha is, you have to say what you feel. So, you have to say the truth. On the other hand, we're just learning in our Gemara that Rabbi Shua was scared to say something because he was scared by saying something, he'll be in danger. So the question is, are you supposed to say something or not? So some want to suggest that there's a nafkamina if it's a certain danger or it's a suffix. But others want to make say the difference is when it's a din, when it's a situation of issa v'heter, you have to say. When it's a different type of situation, you don't have to say. So they want to differentiate what is going to be that even and Aruch HaShulchan and Chosh Mishpat Siv Aleph says in Chosh Mishpat Paskins in Simon Yud Bey Sif Aleph, that if the Rav sees Avil Achshav Nagu, Shem Bezin Roy Sakana Bedover, if the Bezin sees as a Sakana, Yechayim Lestalik, they could walk away, but feel Gemar did, even if they know the decision. But feel Dan Kavua, even if he's the Rav of the town. However, says the Aruch HaShulchan, Vdavka Kshayi Sakana Bedover, when there's certainly a Sakana, if it ain't Sakana, but if there's no sakana involved, rek sheyesh loy tarumis, that he's concerned that people will speak about him, then any yochel estalik. So in other words, what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying is that we have to look in every situation. We have to look, is it a real sakana? We have to look at what's going to be the situation. And maybe that's how we reconcile the Sifri that said, explain loy segurim v'neish in our Gemara. In a situation where there's clear danger, then it's best to back off. When not, then you don't have to. Then when it's not clear that there's danger, even if it will be uncomfortable, a Rav has no right to back off.